Oh, that's right. We're right here, live from Sharp Facets Gallery, still right here at Sharp Facets Gallery, at least for a little longer. And today, my very special guest is Congressman Jeff Duncan. And he was just looking up, and they have named you number 10 from Conservative Review, was the 10th most conservative politician, I guess we should say.
Member of Congress.
Member
that's
of
correct.
Congress.
Yeah, House and Senate, so.
That's a pretty conservative.
I thought I would have been in one or two, but it's actually the board that voted. I was looking at it to see how they came up with those rankings, and the board voted. And on the top 25 conservatives, I'm number 10.
Right.
Mark Meadows from North Carolina. Mike Lee's number 2. Thomas Massie from Kentucky is 3. Justin Amash, 4. Ted Cruz, 5. Jim Jordan, 6. Dave Brat from Virginia, 7. Rand Paul, Senator Paul, number 8. Louie Gohmert from Texas, number 9. And yours truly, number 10.
Well, you're in good company.
I think so. Good
Yeah.
guys. I'm happy. So
that's great. So you have been doing a constituent week here. Just got home from Congress last week. So what's the mood out there, Jeff?
Optimistic. You know, people are happy. They're seeing the economy start to turn around a little bit. They're seeing people have some consumer confidence. They are happy that we finally have a commander in chief that does what he says he's going to do. And
so you think the bombing last week on the airbase was part of this? Because I think that's a big part of it, that he did go out and do something.
I think so. For too long, too many red lines were drawn that were never adhered to and never backed up. If you're a parent out there, you know, when you tell your child something, you have to back it up with something. And if you don't, they'll continue to get away with it and run all over you. So it's the same way in foreign policy. You're around the district talking about health care, talking about infrastructure needs, which generally is a state issue. I know you've probably had folks from the state in here talking about roads and bridges, but Donald Trump's talked about it as well. So we'll have a big infrastructure bill focusing on highways and ports and airports and probably rail and some other things. So we need to make sure that we do what's right for the taxpayer there. Talking about
government
funding.
Well, I just saw where,
let's
see, what did it say? That Mick, our new budget director, is going to be talking about budget cuts.
Yeah, I mean, I'll see what his look, we've got to pay for infrastructure needs somehow.
Sure.
So you look at what the government's doing that might not be constitutional, might not be a role of government, and you look at, you know, infrastructure issues are, you know, those things government should provide so our economy can prosper. But just make sure it's paid for.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Somebody's making Gracie
and
excited.
We've got.
Sorry.
A beautiful.
Gracie, go lay down.
Protector dog.
Yeah,
here.
We're protected in here. That is for sure. So
I don't think she liked Obamacare.
No, she never was much of a proponent of Obamacare. But since you brought it up, that seems to be one of the issues, Jeff, though, that has a lot of conflict to it. Those people that have had use of Obamacare have gotten, if not free, very free, shall we say, health care, are really concerned about what is going to happen. People that know that President Trump was going to, quote, get rid of Obamacare, and they have not at this point, are really concerned about the, are we going to have Obama light? Why hasn't it been withdrawn and then a new policy put in? You know, well, there's a lot of angst when it comes to Obamacare.
Yeah, on all fronts. The campaign promises from Republicans for a long time, at least since 2010, is to repeal and replace Obamacare with replace it with more free market solutions and provide opportunity for lower cost for premiums, better care, get the government out between that doctor-patient relationship, those sort of things. And it will happen. We will repeal it, and there will be some sort of replacement. That's sort of where we are, Ann, in that leadership wants to use budget reconciliation to pass the first facet of the repeal effort. And the reason being is that reconciliation bill only takes 51 votes to pass in the Senate. General legislation requires 60 votes in the Senate. Republicans control 52 votes. So unless you go nuclear option on general legislation and allow a simple majority for general legislation to pass, you're going to need to use budget reconciliation to get Obamacare repealed.
But it never even came up.
I don't believe you can count on any Democrats.
Well, it never came up for a vote. And, you know, one of my questions would be, where does, I know as part of the Freedom Caucus, which you are a member of the Freedom Caucus, and I also saw where you have been asked to participate in a working group mm-hmm. that is working on this. But one of the things that was promised is that Obamacare would be repealed. Even if you do a new bill that has the things that, quote, people like out of it, like children can stay on their parents till they're 26 right. and pre-existing conditions, we never got there. Is there a movement to repeal Obamacare, or is it just going to be, what shall we say, remixed?
Well, even if you wanted to repeal Obamacare in one fell swoop, you couldn't do it through budget reconciliation.
Okay.
You can only do things that have budgetary impact under the eyes of the parliamentarian in the Senate. And there's a rule governing it called the Byrd Rule. And so reconciliation is constrained by those budgetary, because it's an annual budget reconciliation bill. That's what we're talking about. So you're constrained by the budgetary nature of that. So even if you wanted to repeal all of Obamacare, you couldn't do it through just that. It would be ruled out of order. So what leadership's trying to do is do as much as they can under the rules of reconciliation. Now, many of us didn't think they went far enough. We wanted to push the edges of that constraining envelope as far as possible, get as much of the repeal effort in there. And keep in mind, the bill that leadership rolled out was only 17 days old when they picked the date for us to vote on it.
Right.
The date was an arbitrary date.
Kind of reminded you of Obamacare, didn't
it? It did. I mean, that was some of the argument, that it was crafted in a secret room, and we didn't see the text, and a small group of people crafted
it. We have to pass it so we can know what's in
it.
Yeah,
there you go. 17 days. It was only a 1,100-page bill or whatever, so I probably could have read it in that time. But so they picked an arbitrary date, and they said, and all the policy people sitting around the table in the speaker's office, I'm sure, said, hey, guess what?
We're doing this on this date.
No, this date is the 7th anniversary of Obamacare being signed into law. Would it not be great?
Cool.
If Republicans were able to repeal it on that same day, the optics would be fabulous. And we repealed it the same day it got signed into law. Yeah, let's vote on that day. Well, don't you think you ought to get consensus on the bill? Make sure you got 216 votes.
Correct.
Before then? They didn't. It was an arbitrary date. Well, by picking that date, what they did is they set unrealistic expectations in the minds of the American people, in the minds of the media, mm-hmm. in the minds of the financial market, and in the president's mind, who's the deal maker. See, if you're going to close, we're going to have a closing on this date. He expects you to show up at the closing table, sign the paperwork. And it was arbitrary. They never had the votes.
Correct.
And so they pulled the bill because they never had the votes.
Instead
of,
they
built it from the top down instead of building the foundation and building this bill up.
Well, why did Paul Ryan push for that when he knew he didn't have the votes?
It was the optics. And he felt like...
But that's politics. That's not doing what's best for the people.
He felt like they could convince enough Republicans that this was all we could get. When we're smart enough to know we could get more. Even though it's reconciliation, there's still some things that we could get. And so once we started bringing those things up, meetings of the White House, President Trump said, yeah, why didn't that in there? So we started building on this thing. And then every time conservatives would push on one side of it, the moderates, it would push them away. So we're, you know, it's a balancing act. They didn't have the votes. And so we didn't go back to square one. I'm part of the working group, as you mentioned. We went back and we said, all right, we all agree on these facets here. We agree on that, agree on that in principle, so let's set those aside. Then let's look at the areas where we don't agree and things the moderates want, things the conservatives want, and see if we can massage those a little bit to get consensus and stay within those constraining guardrails, so to speak, of the Byrd Rule with regard to budget reconciliation. So I think a lot of members didn't understand all that we could or could not do under the Byrd Rule. And keep in mind, this reconciliation bill is just phase one. Now, I want to get as much in phase one as we can, because phase two is outside of the purviews of Congress. That's Secretary Price and Director Mulvaney, budget and HHS Secretary, rolling back a lot of the rules and regulations of Obamacare that Kathleen Sebelius put in place when she was secretary. And then the third part is the reform free market reforms that we've talked about, associational health care plans, allowing insurance to be sold across state lines, and those sort of things. That'll be phase three. There's no promise, no guarantee that phase three will happen.
Right.
Standalone bills still have to get 60 votes in the Senate. Well, here's how they're going to do it. There is some must-pass pieces of legislation coming up. We're going to have to raise the debt ceiling. We're going to have to fund
government.
Wait a minute.
We're going to have to raise the debt ceiling.
Well, we'll talk
We've
about,
been doing that. Okay, we'll talk about that in a
minute. Second. But we're hitting the debt ceiling, and you're going to either stop and risk default or raise the debt ceiling. Anyway, that's a must-pass bill. A CR is coming up. That's must pass. We're going to have SCHIP reauthorization. That's a must pass. And then you're going to have an infrastructure bill, which will garner votes from Democrats and Republicans because it's a big spending bill. And they could take these standalone, I hate this process, by the way, but they could take these standalone free market reform bills like associational health care and attach those to a debt ceiling increase and get it passed. That way you get your free market reforms. And if you start thinking along those lines, we will get phase three, mm-hmm. that way, then you start to realize this will happen. Debt ceiling, you want to talk about that?
Well, I really want to talk a little bit more because one of the biggest calls when you were going to come on and people started calling and asking questions, are you okay? Yeah. Asking questions was, well, people of less means like Obamacare. They like the fact that they have health care for the first time in their lives, and they're very concerned that they won't have health care. So where does the person that doesn't have a lot of money, who has had Obamacare and hasn't had to pay very much because the government has paid the difference in their health care, where does that person stand?
Well, first off, what Republicans hope to do is drive costs down through free market reforms and doing away with a lot of these onerous regulations. So we should, across the board, see lower premiums. That's for employer-sponsored plans as well as individual plans. Keep in mind, you either have insurance.
The cost of health care, though, before we had Obamacare, Jeff, was going up and through the roof before Obamacare even started.
Mainly because of government regulations, because of government's involvement in health care. Government caused the problem and then tried to solve the problem. Obamacare was never about health care, the quality of care, or the rising cost of health care. Obamacare was who was going to pay for it. And taking those that buy private insurance and have the ability, charging them more, and taking that surplus, that extra that you charge, using it to supplement those that have never had it before, as you speak, and those with pre-existing conditions, those in the high-risk pool. So keep in mind, when we talk about insurance, you have employer-sponsored plans. Mm-hmm. If you work at Fuji and you got an employer plan, your premiums have gone up. Hopefully, free market reforms will drive those costs down. We're not really talking about, when we talk about the problems with Obamacare, we're not really talking about employer-sponsored plans other than doing away with the employer mandates, which required companies over a certain employee threshold to provide certain services, and also the change of full-time employment, what that did. But the issue is with those individuals, Ann, that don't have an employer plan,
right,
who have to purchase insurance from an insurance broker,
right,
and may have found few choices out there before.
Right.
Definitely find fewer choices now because we have one provider in South Carolina. That's
correct.
Blue Cross Blue Shield. And if they have a pre-existing condition, whether they were shut out of the marketplace, well,
what's going to happen to them?
Well, we have a thing called high-risk pools. So basically, the reason employer-provided plans or associational plans are more affordable is that they're spreading the risk. The insurance company is spreading the risk out over a larger group of people.
Right.
So what you would do with a high-risk pool is you're creating an individual marketplace group, if you can think of it as a group. So if people that don't have an employer-sponsored plan, they're individuals. They are a group. And there's a high-risk pool for pre-existing conditions. And so you're spreading through that high-risk pool. You're spreading that risk out for that group to help lower the prices. We're going to keep high-risk pools in place. We're actually going to provide some money to the states to fund the high-risk pool and help keep those costs down for individuals. So that's something that's part of the plan that's being talked about is money provided to the states to help with those pre-existing conditions, to help keep the costs down in the individual marketplace. And that's the right thing. So it'll be funds sent down to the state for that. They will still have choices. And if there's more companies offering plans in South Carolina, there will be more companies creating those products, those insurance products, for those individuals. And keep in mind, the federal government under Obamacare, Kathleen Sebelius was given the ability to define essential health benefits. So the federal government, for the first time, said, we're going to define the basics, the essential health benefits that every health plan has to provide. They can provide more, and those will be more costly plans, but every insurance policy has to cover these 10 essential things that the federal government, i.e. Secretary Sebelius, defined as essential health benefits. That means the policy that I buy has to cover mammograms, OBGYN services, maternity, pediatric care. Those are essential health benefits defined by the federal government. When, you know, my family doesn't need any of that. Okay, maybe mammograms. I apologize, but
you don't need pregnancy benefits.
Not necessarily. You're talking about, I don't need OBGYN, don't need pediatric, I have adolescent children. So I don't need any of that. Why should I have to buy a plan that covers that?
Sure.
Would it not be affordable if I had a plan that only covered two adults that are over 50 years old, who have children that are 16 or better, the adolescent children, won't need pediatric care. We don't need maternity services. We don't need any of that. In fact, I believe that if my insurance didn't have to cover those things, I could find a more affordable plan for me and my family.
And you are on the Obamacare. Yeah, you are on it through.
It's just a working group. It started out about 12. It's about 20 something people now, and the vice president's got very active in this, and as has Secretary Price. And so I think good things will happen here.
So when are you thinking that they will bring this back around?
Not until they have consensus is when you'll see a vote called.
So,
This group has moderates and conservatives, and really the whole political conservative, political Republican spectrum here. So,
is healthcare going to have to be? Will it be a requirement?
We're doing away with the individual and employer mandate now. Under the bill Paul Ryan crafted, and I'm assuming this is still in there because I don't know otherwise, that there will be a penalty if you have a lapse in coverage. And that penalty actually go to the insurance company, not the government, so it will be a tax. 30% penalty, so the premium cost would go up 30% if you had a lapse for a period of time. We'll see how that works out.
What about these 26, 27, 28-year-olds that...
They can still be covered on their parents' plan.
After 26?
After 26, they have to get their own. But then should a 28-year-old have to cover geriatric services or, you know, whatever.
Right.
So, you know, do they want to have a health savings account plan that they can put money in pre-tax before taxes come out on their payroll, put it into an HSA, a health savings account, and to help pay for their health care needs and get a catastrophic policy? Because most young people think they're invulnerable. I mean, they think they're healthy and probably will gravitate toward a higher premium, higher out-of-pocket max, catastrophic-type plan, and give me the ability to have some payroll withheld before you take my payroll taxes out to go into an HSA, a health savings account, so I can pay for that out-of-pocket max and that deductible if the time arises.
Okay. But there will also be that high-risk group that you're talking about through the states. So is anybody going to get left out or end up paying more? I think that's everybody's big question is, I like what I have now, regardless of whether they get to use their doctor or not. But for people that have never had insurance before, I like what we have now. Are people going to get left out?
No, the president's been very clear about that nobody's going to lose their health insurance. And I think he means it. I mean, I've been in negotiations with him. But keep in mind, President Obama said that as well. If you like the insurance plan, you keep it.
Sure,
if you like
remember
your doctors,
that. Yeah.
You keep it. We found out none of that was true. And that was all a political spin in order to sell something. And, snake oil salesmen use the same thing to sell their product over the years. And that's what happened here. We found out that wasn't true. I'm doing all I can. The reason I didn't support the AACA initially and all the way up to the end was because I wanted to make sure what we were telling the American people is actually true, and that we got as much in the reconciliation bill as possible so that we could get as much of Obamacare repealed on the front end, understanding phase two and phase three may or may not happen the way I would want it to.
Well, I can remember, and I don't know whether it was on the health care bill or whether it was on a continuing resolution or the budget, whatever it was, I can remember you telling us how you were, that the whip was trying to whip you into shape. And I remember when you and you ended up in the chapel and Trey and everybody ended up there and y'all got together because you were being pushed so hard to do this. So, you know, when President Trump comes out here and says, you Freedom Caucus guys, you better watch out.
You hadn't seen us bend. I mean, it's you know, that's not the way to push people that are, I guess, secure in what they believe about conservative politics and are in it for the right reason. And some people are in this just to hold their seat and be called congressman. There are others trying to do what's right for the American taxpayer and for the country. And that's why I think the Freedom Caucus stood firm on this, because we realized that this bill wasn't all that it needed to be and could be. And I think we're going to get a better product out of it at the end of the day.
Now, I remember when Paul Ryan was became the Speaker of the House, you said you were withholding judgment. You wanted to see how things go. What do you think about how Paul's doing now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not one of these that's bashing Paul over this. I had a conversation with him about his mistakes on this bill of picking an arbitrary date. I mean, this wasn't a government shutdown deadline.
Right.
This wasn't a default deadline. This wasn't, you know, a declaration of war or you know, nobody died. This was just a legislative body failed to bring up a measure for a vote. I mean, in Colombia, we call that adjourned debate. We just adjourn debate on it until a later date and we take it up again, right?
Right.
We'll continue working on it. So picking an arbitrary date and really setting that expectation in the minds of the American people was the mistake. And I told Paul that and he said, yeah, I know, right? He gets it. So I still believe Paul's an honest broker. I think, you know, a lot of times we see staff drive the, not the narrative, but drive the activities in Washington because they have, you know, they have a goal. They want to get something done, and they're probably benchmarked on their performance based on whether these goals get achieved. I'm talking about staff, not congressmen. So I think Paul and leadership is driven by that at some point, sometimes. But at the end of the day, I think Paul has the right goal in mind. That's to move the Republican agenda forward. He understands, of course, probably better than you and I, that Obamacare repeal and replace is just one component. We've got tax reform coming, and you can't really do comprehensive tax reform without getting the Obamacare thing soft because there's some Obamacare taxes in that. So you get tax reform. Then we're going to have to fund government with a CR that's going to expire. You're going to have a debt ceiling increase coming up. You're going to have Donald Trump's infrastructure plan coming up. You're going to have SCHIP reauthorization coming up this summer. So there's a lot of things, and he's Speaker. He's got to lead us through all this and try to look at the agenda and get things
done. Do you
done
think he's doing
in the
his
number
job?
Of legislative days we've
do
got? He's got a tough job. So
do you think
I think
he's
that's
doing
why rushing it, trying to get it done by that date was important
right.
to him. But oftentimes legislatures don't work that way. You know, you got 435 of us, 236 or 7, 5, whatever the number is with Mulvaney and Zinke gone but and Price gone. But and a lot of those people are independent thinkers. So, we'll see. I think Paul's done okay, given the circumstances.
Given the circumstances.
David Wilkins, Speaker of the House one time in Columbia, said, you know, being Speaker of the House over a Republican conference or caucus, they call it down there, is like herding cats. And there's a lot of truth to that, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I just was, since you had said something about that. Hey, let's hear a quick word from our sponsors. We'll be back. Hey, if you've got questions, give us a call, 229-7984. I know some of you have already let me know how you feel about some of the things. We're going to talk more about it. So you keep it right here on WCRS. We'll be back in just a moment.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72 Greenwood. telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too, paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here with Congressman Jeff Duncan. He is also going to be at the Republican County delegation meeting this evening, the election of delegates, I believe. Is that right on that? The courthouse? Yeah, at the courthouse tonight. So he'll be there. Love for you to come out and see what's going on with the Republicans tonight. And I wanted to talk about, you've got the continuing the CR coming up, and you know, we keeping financing the government here, Jeff. I mean, you know, we don't seem to reduce it. Do you think that Mulvaney, I understand, is getting ready, Congressman Mulvaney, who is now the budget director? I tell you what, South Carolina did well in Trump's cabinet.
I don't think it's over yet.
You don't think it's over yet? Okay, well then. What does he know?
Well, I mean, Gowdy has made no secret that he wants to be a federal judge. I think that'll eventually happen.
Wow. Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah. I mean, it's been his desire for a very, very long time, and I think you'll probably see that happen, and I think he'd make a great member of the bench.
Yeah, he certainly would. He doesn't pull any punches, does he? Or he does pull a lot of punches.
Well, God's put him in the right place at the right time and use his skills, so yeah.
Yeah, he's done quite well. But and then, of course, we have former Governor Haley in the U.N. What do you think about how she's doing, Jeff?
Look, I'm very pleased at what Governor Haley's done, Ambassador Haley now, and sent her a text last week and told her that. And I think she has stood firm, and I applaud her for it. Because, you know, the era of Obama foreign policy is over. That was made clear with Syria last week. It's been made clear with a different U.N. ambassador who will stand up to our adversaries and say, you know, Moore, what do you think about this? No, we're not going to have a U.N. meeting with the Security Council behind closed doors, Bolivia. No, we're not going to do that. If you got something to say about Syria, you're going to say it in public.
That's right.
Got something to say about the gas attack? We want to hear it in public. So I applaud her for it. I hope she can keep it up.
Yeah, you got to stand pretty tough. Well, what do you think about with this Susan Rice and all the stuff that's coming out there? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, look, I felt for a long time that there was some sort of funky business going on with the Obama administration there and the whole Trump spying or spying on the transition team. And we know that Michael Flynn's conversations with the Russian ambassador were transcribed, and then he was unmasked. Anytime a U.S. citizen is caught up in surveillance of a foreign operative on U.S. soil or anywhere else, they have constitutional rights. That foreign operative may not, but the U.S. citizen does. And so where are the warrants to listen to his conversation? He's got Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment rights. Is it a FISA court warrant, and does it specifically say we're going to listen to Michael Flynn? Well, we know he was unmasked, and that was leaked to somebody by the Obama administration. I believe now to be Susan Rice spearheading that for political reasons. We'll see how this plays out. But when Michael Flynn's transcript was leaked, I knew there was something going on.
Oh, it certainly has. You know, the problem is it though, doesn't it keep things kind of watch the hand over here and we got this over here? I mean, it makes it very confusing for the everyday person to put it all in perspective and follow. Well, they used to, in business, you always say follow the money, right?
Right.
Yeah. You know, to follow what's happening, and everything is just keep swirling here.
It does. And it's just as difficult for me to keep track of it all. That's why we have committees that have different jurisdictions. That's why we have an intel committee that's focusing on the intelligence side. We've got a judiciary that's an OGR, Oversight and Governmental Reform. They're going to focus on those constitutional violations, Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights of Michael Flynn and other Americans that were caught up in that. and then if they're unmasked and that's leaked to somebody, there's got to be a paper trail somewhere. And hopefully all this will come out.
Absolutely. Well, we wanted to talk a little bit about the CR and then the budget here. So we've got a CR here. We're going to increase how much money we're spending?
I think we're going to see an increase of about $30 billion for military. which is needed, not for the Tomahawk missiles that were just expended in Syria, but ships and planes and things that need to be replenished because the Obama administration and sequester, which was a bad spending plan to do across the board cuts, it really has hurt our readiness and the number of military men, women, and ships and planes and that sort of thing that we have. So Budget Director Mulvaney has come out with the Trump budget request, and we'll probably see either the CR at current levels, which is probably 1070, I believe is a number, plus supplemental for $30 billion, or we'll see a full CR that includes that $30 billion. So you'll go from $1,070,000,000,000 to $1,100,000,000,000. So,
you know what the problem is? We're all numb to these figures, Jeff.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Billion, you know, it used to be
billion
a million.
Here, trillion there.
Yeah, what is it? I mean, and and how do we afford it? And yet I understand that Mick, well, the budget director, Mulvaney, will be coming out with a lot of cuts. So how is this all going to balance out?
Well, I mean, you've got to look at where the cuts are going to be, whether the essential services of government, whether they're going to have a social impact on the nation, what we can afford, what we can't afford, what the constitutional role of government is and what it's not. But you and I both know we're only talking about discretionary income. We're talking about basically one-third of all government spending, plus or minus.
How about getting rid of a few employees up there?
That's what we should do, yeah.
I mean, every time you go to Washington, you see how it's growing and growing, and they're needing more space, and more people are working, and the between the IRS, the Department of Education, all these different departments, we get more and more people working there.
Yeah, come look at the construction cranes. I point out to everybody around Washington, they're building, building, building. And the only place that didn't really experience a downturn during the recession was Washington in the immediate metropolitan area. Look, I think we ought to close a lot of government agencies and cut back. We could definitely make it easier for Americans to file their taxes and cut the IRS back some.
Are we gonna have a tax plan that's going to allow that to happen?
Yeah, Kevin Brady's plan is on individual filers to allow them to file on a large postcard, to simplify taxes to that point. You know, lower the rates, of course, but also simplify the tax code to the point you can file your taxes yourself. You can do it on a postcard, put a stamp on it, send it in. That's the right thing for Americans. So we're going to see that. Maybe we'll, at the same time, see a benefit of shrinking the IRS at that point as well. And Department of Education, we could look at devolving some of that back to the states, providing block grants to the states for education funding. Every time we talk about closing the Department of Education, everybody's like, oh, you're going to cut funding to our schools. No, we can still do that through block grants to the schools or to the states, and they can provide it to the school districts. We're talking about cutting back that Department of Education that just was stood up in 1978 that provides a lot of the mandates and strings attached to that money, forcing these schools to adopt Common Core and other things, all the mandates that come down from the federal government. So there are things in the government that we can start looking to reduce the size and scope of.
Now, of course, how do you think, how do you feel about President Trump? I know that Trump was not your first choice here when we were talking about having a president here, but how do you feel now that you've actually met him? I understand you've had some time to talk to him and everything. What are you thinking about Donald Trump as president?
Yeah, so far so good. I've been impressed with his cabinet picks. I've been impressed with his Supreme Court nomination. I've been impressed with a lot of the things he's done. A young administration is going to make some missteps. I think they probably have with regard to NSC. You're seeing some things go on with the Security Council now. You know, his involvement in Obamacare repeal and replace, probably co-opted by leadership early on. This was the only plan we would get and embraced it. Then when we started saying, no, we can do this and that, he was going, well, why aren't we doing that? So
you find him open to discussion then?
He has been. I mean, I was impressed that he allowed the facilitation of a conversation in the White House cabinet room with us. And
did you go bowling?
I did not go bowling.
You didn't go the bowling? I thought he did that. Didn't he do
he
bowling and beer?
He invited us, and then we,
it snowed in Washington, and we didn't go, and they postponed all that. So I've been to the White House. Been to the White House proper once, to the Cabinet Room, and I've been to the Executive Office Building once. So hopefully I'm going to go more, especially when my Clemson Tigers come down for the national championship. Go Tigers.
Absolutely.
Got to get that in, though.
Absolutely. Well, that has been talk about something. That was a fantastic win, wasn't it?
It was fabulous.
And how about those Lady Gamecocks?
Lady Gamecocks, I tell you.
With their parade
Asia
on
Wilson,
Sunday.
She was incredible to watch. And I know her father. He used to live in Lawrence County. He ran Piedmont Wilderness Institute, which is a juvenile justice program. He still works for the Associated Marine Institute, the parent company for PWI in Clennon. And so he lived in Clennon for a while. And Asia was just amazing to watch.
Yeah, so good stuff for sure enough. Now, I want to take a break, but when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about some immigration issues. And also, you just wrote a letter to on April 6th about some oil issues down there in, Venezuela? Thought we ought to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I want to know how you got a copy of that. But anyway, that's all good.
I'm in the know, Jeff. We'll be right back.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery, this afternoon. Got a couple of these Rolexes, these men's Rolexes, and they are stainless and gold. Got a super price on both of them. Check those out on our Facebook page, WCRS.AM Radio. Now, we have, I wanted to tell a joke here. I have a little joke here for you. The IRS has returned the tax return to a man in New York City after he apparently answered in response to the question, "Do you have anyone dependent on you?" The man wrote 2.1 million illegal immigrants, 1.1 million crackheads, 4.4 million unemployable scroungers, and 80,000 criminals in over 85 prisons. Right there, he said, should count. And the IRS stated that the response he gave was unacceptable. The man's response back to the IRS was, "Who did I leave out?" I thought that was kind of cute. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, she left out the politician part. But,
yeah, I was trying to be nice. Yeah. It does say 450 idiots in Congress and a group that call themselves politicians. Yes, it says that. I was trying to be nice, Jeff.
I know. I saw it.
Yeah.
But, I have looked at the Rolexes. They're nice. They're not out of my they are out of my price range. They're not something I would buy. But I do recommend, if you want a Rolex, I think they're priced really well.
Yeah.
These are estate watches. I came from the auction industry. I looked at them today. Nice watches. If you're looking for a Rolex, estate Rolex, I think the value will only go up. Yeah. I really do.
Well, the other thing is they do have a 3-year warranty on them, so they have been completely reworked and everything, so they're in good condition.
Look at the pictures, folks. If you're looking for a Rolex, that's a good buy.
Yeah. Do you ever miss your auctioneer business?
A lot. You know, I walk so much in Washington that I find myself counting. I don't know what it is about the auction business, but I've heard this from others, but I'm counting all the time. When I'm driving, I find myself counting. When I'm walking, I'm counting stuff.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or, you know, 25, 35, 45, 55, 65, I count all the time.
Yeah.
It's just...
It's ingrained.
I did it for 16 years, so not that I called bids every day, but...
Yeah,
I did enough. So
yeah, exactly. Weird. Well, I just wondered. Now, one of the things that we wanted to talk a little bit about is immigration. How do you think the president is? You know, his pause hasn't been very well received.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate because he really focused on the countries where the threat is, and that's countries that are strongholds for Al Qaeda and ISIS. Boko Haram with regard to Africa. and trying to keep the nation safe. They're sitting about denying folks that are seeking asylum or will ultimately be refugees to come to this country. But it was a pause, not an end. And so these countries were identified by Congress and President Obama in previous legislation, so they're not just odd countries he picked. It's no Muslim ban, because if you're going to have a Muslim ban, you would definitely list the largest Muslim country in the world by population, Indonesia. So it wasn't a Muslim ban. It focused on where the threats could come from. And he wanted to get his people in place within the security apparatus, that's FBI, DHS, CIA, so that they could advise him on whether, and Department of State, on whether the screening processes are right, whether there is a real threat, whether we ought to pause this for longer, whether we need to limit or expand the number of refugees into this country. So, you know, I applaud him for the first one. I applaud him for the second one. It's less about immigration. It's more about national security.
What do you think about his plans for immigration?
Look, I like concrete, steel, and barbed wire. I've said that a long time. More border fencing, more security on the southern borders where the immigration.
Well, you've been down on the border.
Yeah. So I've been down there. I've flown over a lot of the mountain areas. You can't do fencing in the mountains in kind of east of Nogales, Arizona. But what you can do is there are areas where there needs to be a lot more physical barriers.
I understand.
And then areas where you can't do physical barriers, then you put your manpower. So it's sort of a force multiplier. You're putting the bad guys that are bringing drugs or other nefarious items into this country, you kind of put them in corridors where you can more easily apprehend them. And I believe in a layered approach of physical barriers, electronic surveillance, manpower, using aerostats, drones, ground sensors, you know, anything we can use to determine who's coming in the country, when they come, where they're crossing, where they're going, and try to intersect them and stop them, because I believe there are bad elements trying to get the country, not just the folks that are wanting to come take jobs.
Now, what about the people that are already here, though, that have been here for years and they have stayed? Maybe they've overstayed their visas. They've established families and businesses and all this type of thing. What do you think about that?
Well, I've said a long time now that visa overstays ought to go back. I mean, we gave them a permission slip to come, and they violated the terms of that. So that's low-hanging fruit. We know who those people are. That's about 49% of all illegals in this country. The other people may have come here, established families, like you said. They may have had children here, and what we do about that. First off, let's deal with the visa overstays. Let's deal with the criminal element, the people that have broken the law and they're filling our prisons, which I think President Trump has done, and return them to their country, not to come back. And then there's going to be an element of people that are here illegally that came to work, have established families, and maybe they have some children here called Dreamers. We can come up with something for them, whether it's a employer-sponsored guest worker program, if they're gainfully employed, whether it's a way for the Dreamers, the children that were born here to illegal parents, a way for them to earn citizenship. That were, excuse me, not born here, but were brought here at a young age by their children, by their family. There are proposals out there to allow those children to, the Dreamers that were brought here by their parents, to allow them to serve in our military, to earn, pay penance, and earn their citizenship. But, Ann, if you've got American citizens that are wanting those military slots, and there's not enough slots available to meet the needs of the American kids, why are we going to allow the Dreamers to get ahead of those American citizens that want to become, you know, Army soldiers or sailors or whatnot? So there's a caveat to that Dreamer pathway to citizenship with regard to service in the military. Now, if we continue to as President Trump has talked about, increasing the number of our military that's in all services and increasing planes and ships and air and all those things, then there may be slots for the Dreamers, but not until after the Americans have filled all those slots, in my opinion.
Okay.
But I do believe, look, if we do that, I believe in paying a penance, paying a price, and service is that penance. And then earning, I mean, no greater service to our country than serving in the military, putting yourself in harm's way, defending the Constitution and me and my family. pay that penance and serve in our military, absolutely become a United States citizen. I think that's a great path. But we need to address, did that come before or after American citizens?
Absolutely. Well, you know, are listening right here to WCRS, and I wanted to ask you, what are you doing this week? You're all over the district, I understand. What's happening?
Wow. So I have 11 counties in my district, and we're going to be in about 8 or 9 of those counties during this week. And I was just looking at my schedule for tomorrow. We start off in Clemson doing a law enforcement appreciation breakfast. We've got a plant tour. We've got a lunch with some business leaders. So everything tomorrow is going to be up in the Oconee, Anderson, Upper Anderson, West Pickens, Oconee County area. And I'll end up with a meeting in Lawrence tomorrow evening. And then the next day we are up in the Easley area once again, in the Pickens part of that area, and come back toward Fountain Inn and Simpsonville, that southern Greenville part of my district. And then on Thursday, there again, we're in Anderson again, that area, actually doing a lot of constituent meetings that day, all the way through the Anderson Municipal Association banquet that night. So just a whole blend of constituent meetings, business drop-bys, and people have asked for me to come by and visit their business and
Any doing any town halls?
I haven't done that many town halls in my 6+ years of service, where you stand in front of a room, an auditorium, and all that. That's just something we've never done a whole lot of. Early, like 2011, I did a few of those. I think if I look back, I've done maybe 6 official town halls, if you want to call them that. Dacusville, Powdersville, Lawrence. But we kind of gravitated away from that back in 2011, 2012, and found a new format called a listening session, where it gave me a chance to interact one-on-one with those constituents that had issues, because your issues are different than my issues, than his issues and her issues, and make myself available for enough time so we can have that one-on-one interaction. It seemed to have worked well. I'm not adverse to doing a town hall, but if we do one, it'll be on our terms. It'll be when I have the time scheduled to do that, and we'll try to do it. But up until the last 60 days, there hadn't been any encouragement to do town halls. And if you really delve into it, the people that are encouraging me to do town halls are the indivisibles, the group that are Democrats that are upset that President Trump's a president, Republicans control Congress. They want a chance, have you seen on YouTube, to holler and scream at the politician and get that YouTube moment. Look, folks, if I do a town hall, it'll be to provide information to you and try to answer your questions, not to provide a forum for a bunch of screaming and hollering. That's just not the adult way to practice civics.
You know, the thing that I find so amazing about this issue is the Republicans were not real happy when the Democrats controlled things and when President Obama, but, you know, people had to get over it and they had to go on. And yes, they did politically what they needed to do within the confines of the political office, but it wasn't as much as what has happened in the last 3 or 4 months. It seems like a Band-Aid has been ripped off and it's just raw. And I find it very amazing that this is the type of thing that we're dealing with across our country.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. And look, there is no job description really for a congressman. And I can tell you that doing a town hall is not in my job description. It's something that politicians gravitate toward as a means of providing information about what's going on in Washington to the constituents and answering their questions. Well, good golly, we do that in so many different formats now. We do it radio. We do it the listening sessions that I do in my office. We do it through Facebook. We do it through Twitter. We do it in real time.
Right.
You don't have to wait for your congressman to come back and hold a town hall for you to find out what's going on in Washington, because we're doing it real time, multiple times during the day. And if you got questions, we answer those. If you got a question about the Obamacare bill and where we are on that, you put it on there in a comment. We're probably going to answer that unless it slips by. And when we have a zillion comments, sometimes that happens. I apologize, but we try. And there are just so many different ways. So I consider those type social media, excellent opportunities for people to ask what's going on in Washington and find out from their congressman. I'm putting a lot of information out there. You're a friend on Facebook.
Yep.
You see that.
Right.
We put it out there. I did it in real time during this Obamacare repeal and replacement, multiple times during the day. Guys, here's where we are. Here's what I'm hearing. Just came back from the White House, et cetera. And people had questions, and we answered them. Well, how is that different than a town hall? And then you're looking at me, and you got a chance to talk over somebody.
Right. I agree. I just wanted to bring that up because
but
that
I
is
I look
a question.
At it as multifaceted, right? I'm not adverse to doing the town hall if that's what the folks want. But, you know, we're going
to
do it.
It'll be
our
like
time,
an auction, folks.
Station.
I'm over here on the left, and I'm talking to this one, and now I'm going to go move over here to the right, and we'll talk to this one. And you've got the microphone right now. What have you got to say?
You're pretty good. That's sold. Hey, that was 25. That was good.
Yeah.
That was good.
But I mean, I just want to bring that up because there has been some comment about, well, he's not doing town halls. You know, so there you go.
So
now
we've
talked about it.
I've been in office for 6 years and 4 months now. Tell me how many town halls you've seen me. I'll ask them, how many town halls have you attended that I've done?
Right.
We hadn't done town halls. We did them early. And so now this is push because it's a concerted effort nationwide by generally the Democrat Party and their operatives to try to get Republicans to hold town halls so that people can take their camera phones and they record that YouTube video of all the hollering and screaming and making the politician look bad. If I do a town hall, we won't have any of that. I'll tell them real quick. We're not going to holler and scream at each other. We're not going to talk over each other. And I'd be glad to answer your question. But I'll give you a warning, too. If you're hollering and screaming and talking over each other and all that, I'm gone. Because I'm just not going. It's not fair to the other people that came to hear.
Sure.
And they didn't come to hear you holler, and they came to actually have their question answered. And if you're going to talk over somebody or talk over the guy that's trying to answer that question for them,
sure.
It's just not fair, and that's not how civics ought to be done in this nation.
Well, so. We certainly have gotten way far away from that in this country right now. Jeff Duncan, I think this has been an excellent forum right here this afternoon. I certainly have enjoyed getting caught up and always love it when you come by and sit down and we have a conversation.
Well, I enjoy it as well. Sometimes it's not feasible to get to Sharp Facets Gallery here and sit face-to-face. We try to do some by phone when I'm in Washington or other places, but I'm glad we were able to do this today, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. That's going to do it for us. Bye-bye, everybody.
See ya.